Warning, the hosts of this program are not broadcast professionals. They have no idea what they're doing. They are bad at this. One of them uses swear words. A lot. All complaints about this show are correct. You have been warned. This is your last chance to download a real podcast. Okay, you asked for it. Here are Dave Brown and Iron Mike Irons. This is Entitled Town.
All right. Thank you, Al. I was just talking with Al, and he was telling me that's the first time this season that when he said our names, that both of us were here. And he's been saying my name even when Patrick Scartelli is here, which I thought was an odd thing, but I didn't want to be like the Gallagher brother sitting up in the balcony nitpicking. So I didn't give Al any notes over the last couple months when we had Patrick Scartelli, who was gracious enough to serve as a fill-in host while I was off doing some professional type things. But it was good to come back. It was good to see Al. Al was telling me that during the election, he was a poll worker, and then that conversation got very weird because his idea of a poll worker is quite different than mine. But, you know, Al's always up to Al shenanigans, and Iron Mike Irons, you're here. You're up to your shenanigans, and I hope those are going well.
Who is this?
I'm back. I'm sure you're all disappointed. Patrick Scartelli was a great fill-in host.
Now Entitled Town, now with 50% less humor.
Well, oh, ouch.
Welcome back.
That is a huge downgrade. I got to say, Scartsy did a great job. I especially liked his pick for, because you guys did a lot of that rapid fire stuff, and his pick for best Patriots game of the Dynasty era was a great one. Do you remember what it was?
The Chargers game, January of 07.
No. He picked the...
Oh, the Buffalo opener.
That Buffalo game. 2009, that Buffalo... No one has said that on this show. We've asked a number of people that question. I wouldn't have said that. I don't think you would have. And I think that's one of those games that you're not going to hear about from a media person. Because... And listening to him talk about it, my sense is that it's one of those things where, as a fan... You know, you can really appreciate the weight of that victory. It was the first game of the season, but it was also the first game that Brady had played in a year, coming back from his knee injury. Things did not go well at the beginning. And then to see it all come together, to feel that kind of magic for the first time in a long time, and I'm sure that was a big deal. And I thought that was a great pick. And you know, it reminded me of some of the games that I've seen that, just aren't on my radar. And you get accustomed to when things aren't going well, they're going to turn around at some point. And it, you know what it made me think of, or I wound up thinking about that Buffalo game a few weeks ago against, I think it was the Denver game. Was that the one where they came back, they made the two interceptions, and they got right down on the final drive and then just couldn't put it in? Am I remembering that correctly? Was it the Denver game?
You lost me.
Was that
the game you're
that?
Talking about? No, I got you. I'm not following what game you're meaning. And usually I'm good at that stuff.
You were just all garbled up right there. So what were you saying?
I don't understand. I'm not sure what game it is. The Denver, you're not talking about the Denver AFC title game in 2015, are you?
No. It's all about this season. So there was a game a few weeks ago when they played Denver.
Oh, Denver was the 18-12 loss. Buffalo, I mean, obviously we know what happened in Buffalo a week ago when
it was Denver.
Newton gave away the football. Yeah.
That Denver game where they made the two interceptions and came back.
Yes, locked through in a deception late, correct. Yes.
Wasn't it two, though? Didn't they get two picks on him in the second half?
Yeah, I believe you're correct. That game was just incredibly frustrating. This has been a frustrating year. I made the point, I have to go out to watch a lot of the games because they're not on local TV as much. in the Northwest anymore. I made the point going out for the Buffalo game on the heels of that Denver game. It was the first time that going out on a Sunday morning to watch the Patriots seemed like a chore. Mm-hmm. But last night, I enjoyed last night's game. I really did. Or Monday night's game.
Look, they've played their last three games all came down. I'm sorry, three of their last four games. So they had that real just garbage game against the 49ers where they were just overmatched. I mean, the 49ers just showed up and the team that the Patriots put on the field that day was not good enough to beat San Francisco. And San Francisco is the reigning NFC champion. They got a pretty decent team out there, especially the defense. But three of their last four games have come right down to the end.
No, you're right. And even the Kansas City game, the Monday nighter in Kansas City, they played – I mean, the quarterback play was atrocious, but they had a solid plan. They gave Kansas City the game. They gave Denver the game. They gave Buffalo the game. And that's what happens when you have poor quarterback play.
Yeah. And in any one of those given weeks, they've had poor quarterback play for sure. And they've had very inconsistent quarterback play all year. They changed things up this week. They got a win that they needed. They went on the road in the division with about half their defense on the shelf. If you include all the guys who opted out,
the Jets are garbage. Okay, and I've kind of made the
even then.
I mean, division road games are always tough. You know, the environment's different. Division road games are always tough.
But with the personnel they had, this was a remark. This was a challenge. People are kind of dumping on this win. And, you know, first of all, it's hard to win in this league. I think Bob Soci, I just retweeted him about an hour ago, and he had a great point where he essentially said, he was chirping at Maz, and he said, only the shameless have the audacity to assert that winning an NFL game is, quote, shameful, because I'm guessing that's the language Maz used. I can't see Maz.
You know what's shameful? Maz looking in the mirror. That's shameful. I won't even go anywhere near that dumpster fire of a show. It's radio for masochists, radio for losers, losers mentality.
Yeah. But I think we can agree that basically all of the dumb takes in the area, if they're not directly just copying or recycling those terrible takes from Felger and Maz, they're all more or less inspired by that, right?
That they're absolutely. Like, it's the you're correct. They are inspired by that. It is the bar keeps getting the ceiling is not high, and the floor keeps getting. They just keep digging and digging and digging. You got those two morons of WEEI, Andy Hart and Rich Teeth, openly rooting against the team and against it really is. It's 98.5 has really polluted and muddied the waters. It's rewarding idiocy.
So here, let me throw something at you. Let's first of all talk about what this team is. They are 3-5.
They compete their asses off every week. Belichick's made the point to point that out.
Yeah, and you know what? As a Giants fan, I'm going through something very similar, where I feel like the pandemic just and a number of other things, like a cornerback getting arrested for armed robbery, like all of these things transpired between the end of free agency and the beginning of training camp. And then you throw in opt-outs, and it was like, oh my God, like the Giants show up to playing pretty good defense, but they're doing it without a secondary. And you're like, if they had all their guys, or just some of those guys, they'd be in much better shape. But they're competing in every game. They lack the depth to finish. And I think that that's where the Patriots are pretty much, is they lack the depth to finish a lot of these games. Mm-hmm. But also, their quarterback has made mistakes. And this week, they came out with a little different game plan. I actually thought the offense was great. The Jets got some guys back. They played well offensively. Flacco was on. He had his receivers. He had those big guys on the outside. He was just throwing jump balls up to, and until he threw a pick to J.C. Jackson, that was going pretty well. Both teams overachieved last night offensively. But the Patriots show up, and they have had, for the last month or so, just no middle of the defense. And it got worse because Lawrence Guy is out. There's just – they just cannot control the run the way that they need to. And Newton played better, but let me say this. All things being the same, do you agree with me that they are probably a couple of plays away from being like a 5-3 team? Would you agree with that?
I thought about that, but that's the difference between, I mean, a football game ultimately comes, Belichick said it for years, a football game comes down to a couple of plays.
Yep. Yeah. And good teams win close games. They do.
The margin in the NFL, the margin between winning and losing really isn't that much. I mean,
no.
I liken this season, and you might be able to relate on this level with the Giants. I feel this season. We're halfway through it now. They're 3-5. It reminds me a lot of the 93 season, Parcells' first season in New England, where the team, to be frank, they weren't the most talented team in the league. Obviously, they started 1-11. But during that 1-11 start, they were in most of those games. They had a devastating loss against a really good Pittsburgh team on the road. And I feel like they're learning A, who they are, mm-hmm. B, they're learning to be competitive, and C, they took a step towards last night of learning how to win. And that's the same thing with missing what happened with the Giants game when they played the Buccaneers last Monday night. Same thing. Jones, I don't like Jones. I know you're more of a Jones guy than I am. Jones brought them down the field, couldn't finish the game. Reminder, the same thing happened with New England and Seattle and in Buffalo last week.
Yeah. Yep. No, I get what you're saying. Although Jones did finish this week and Cam Newton did too. And that's what you want to see. You want to see these guys competing down to the last play and then improving on it. And that's what I feel like watching the Giants this week and then watching the Patriots. That's where I feel like, you know, it's encouraging. And you go back to that Parcells first season. And the outlook there was, hey, we just went through, three or four really crummy years. And for the Giants just went through three really crummy years. So now I'm sitting there looking at my 2-win team and I'm going, this is different. This team is showing up every week. This team makes me feel like they could win a game, and just winning the game would be something to enjoy. Like I could celebrate beating the football team from Washington. It's fun for me. It's the only team they've beaten this year. They've done it twice. But even when they lost, I mean, they had that horrible loss against Philly. And it was like, you know what, though? This team showed up and played this week. And that's a stark difference from what I had been experiencing. My problem with them last year was, where is this going? This team does not improve. They keep making the same mistakes. Daniel Jones, we're talking about him. His fumble problems, I was like, oh, my God, Daniel Jones took a big hit late in the game and held on to the football. That's great. Cam Newton held on to the football this week late in the game. Almost gave it away at the goal line once. But
oh, God, you know? I my head almost exploded when that happened.
Oh, man. You all – he watching that on Twitter, it's Cam Newton, like – unanimously triggered every Patriots fan with the same exact thing at the same exact time.
I almost concussed myself doing the Klavan shake. I swear to God.
But you know, look, everyone wants to basically define this team in terms of, is the dynasty over? Is the season over? Is everything over? It's always sky is falling. And none of that's over. You got a raw deal. No one's talking about the fact that you got a raw deal. You had the most opt-outs, okay? You also had to do this. You also had to do this at a time when you were bringing in a new quarterback, which you would like to have OTAs. You'd like to have a full training camp, some preseason games, to get the sense of, okay, how are teams going to scheme against us when they see what we've put on film? And the Patriots didn't get that. So the first couple of weeks, you had no real scheming going on. So Cam Newton didn't have to be as fluid in the offense. He didn't have to be as confident. He could just react and play. You see this all the time in the preseason, where the superior players just dominate preseason games. I remember, and when I say superior players, the guys who are more physically talented and are just are the kind of guys that the draft experts love. Those guys dominate in preseason when no one is scheming. And the first guy that comes to mind for me is Barkevius Mingo. Barkevius Mingo, top 10 draft pick, never really became a big, you know, like an all-pro or a Pro Bowl type guy. But I remember that game when the Patriots went out and got him, and they just threw him in, and they're playing the Giants, last preseason game of the year, no scheming going on, and he is just better than everyone on the field. And he's running around, getting sacks, he's stripping the quarterback, it's fumbles and recovering it. And you look at the guy, you're like, oh, my God, this guy is like Lawrence Taylor. And then somebody schemes, and they get him alone in coverage. I think it was Kareem Hunt, and he gets burned for like a 30-yard completion in the regular season. And if it wasn't Hunt, it was another running back. But maybe it was Giovanni Bernard. But here we are. Anyway, that was like 4 years ago. So the point
Mingo
I'm trying
led
to make
the Bears
is,
in rushing on Sunday, by the way.
What?
He led the Bears in rushing on a fake punt on Sunday. The Bears offense is wretched.
Of course. But you get the idea.
Right.
Where I was going earlier when I asked you about the one or two plays and this could be a winning team, I was trying to make the point that if Tom Brady were here, they'd be a winning team. They would have made those couple of plays and they would be like 5-3 or 6-2. And that's just the way and that's where you see, like, we talk about this all the time, where Belichick has said you don't know what your team is until Thanksgiving. And that's when you can really start to lean on your strengths and try to minimize your weaknesses. And having Tom Brady make those one or two plays and get you to 5-3 or 6-2 puts you in a much better position to head into from Thanksgiving on. They don't have that luxury. It was always going to end at some point. Unfortunately for them, it ended this year, when they had very little time to work on their quarterback, and they also had to take Brady's dead money hit. For those of you people who are cap is crap people, the Patriots had to eat $26 million this year just from Brady. So
better this year than when the cap potentially goes down next year.
Yes. And for all of the talk about, oh, now the Patriots have all this money and they didn't spend it, all that money became available right after the opt-outs. So most of that money is opt-out money. They got a little bit back from Hernandez. I don't know why that took 100 years, but it did. And they got a little bit back from Antonio Brown. But the opt-out money just moves. That's an illusion. Okay, that's like a bookkeeping type thing. All that opt-out money lands on next year's cap anyway, when the cap will be reduced. So they don't have this huge war chest of money that they're rolling over. All those contracts come back onto the cap next year. And at the time that they had it, there was really only one or two free agents that they could have gone out and gotten, like a Snacks Harrison or a Jadeveon Clowney. But
both guys are I heard of hims, and then neither of them are playing well.
Right. And it's one of those things where it's like you go out and make that major investment when it's probably not going to make much financial success next year.
According to Miguel, Pat's cap, they do have $21.2 million in salary cap space this year. To your point, they can roll that over into next year to help account for a lower cap. That's why they're sitting on this treasure trove of cap space.
But it's an illusion, because that $21 million is just going to go right back to So Dante Hightower's contract, Dante Hightower, Marcus Cannon, Eugene Chung.
Jeez.
Sorry.
Speaking of the early 90s Patriots.
Patrick Chung. Wow. That's a mistake that I almost make every single time I talk about Chung. And finally it happened. But Patrick. All those contracts come back on next year and just eat up that money again. You know what I mean? So it's sort of an illusion. They're rolling that money, and those contracts will just eat it up immediately. So it's it's a cat mirage, I guess you could call it. So, so this idea that like, oh, they could have run out and spent a bunch of money. No, everyone was signed. It was a really crummy situation to be in. The Giants were able to run out and get Logan Ryan. Okay. Patriots didn't need a cornerback. The Giants did, but there was like one or two left out there. They got Logan Ryan, and he's played fairly well for them, but you know, the Patriots just couldn't find those solid veteran types to fill the roles that they needed at the time they learned that they were needing them. And, you know, what's killing them right now isn't even Newton. It's if you're going to win with Cam Newton, you need to do what they did last night. You need to control the ball, control the clock.
They had the ball 37 minutes and still gave up 27 points.
It was an outrageous number of plays. Do you have the box score there? Because it was a completely outrageous number of plays that they had on offense. It was like 80 plays or something.
And they had 30 first downs. They had 41 rushes, 35 passes. They had 76 plays. That's approaching Super Bowl 51 territory there.
You have to make stops if you're going to win that way.
They cannot commit penalties, and they can't turn over the football. First and 20, 100%. When they had Brady, was a minor inconvenience. It is a death sentence now with this offense.
Agreed. And they were a little bit better at that last night, but you're right. You can't afford to – we always talk about the 90 Giants. We just hit Scartelli bingo. but you texted me during one of the games, like, this feels like – I think it was last week. You're like, this feels like – I was like – you said it felt like the championship game, the NFC championship game from that season. And I was like, this was what every Phil Simms game was like. And then you said that game was Hostetler. And I said, I don't care. This is what every Phil Simms game was like when I was a kid. Was like, okay, grind, 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 make a stop, grind, grind, field goal, make a stop. That's what the Patriots kind of want to be right now. If they're going to be that, they have to make stops. And with the offensive personnel they have right now, it's like we're back at Super Bowl 52. Nothing in the middle. There's just no one there to make a stop. And if you can't make stops in the middle, you're not going to get pressure. You're not going to – they're not getting into third and longs. That's been roundly discussed, okay? They're getting run on first down, and teams are getting 5-6 yards. Teams are getting into third and short, and teams are burning them. And then
the Jets only had 65 yards on the ground last night, so credit where credit's due. 18 carries, 65 yards. They did a good job last night. It's the goddamn Jets.
Flacco was killing them, but Flacco keeps both teams in the game. You know, he gave the Patriots a chance to win. That's what they have to do. They won that game. That's the thing. This is why I don't get upset about, hey, they only beat the Jets by three. Don't get too excited. You know, people want to dump on your joy of experiencing your third win. It's November. It's your third win of the year. Enjoy it. But what you have to respect about it is they played their game. Keep it solid. Hold on to the football and wait for the other team to make a mistake.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened last night. And I get a certain sadistic glee of pulling Lucy pulling away the football from Charlie Brown from the Jets and the Jets fans. It was, yes. I cackled long after Folk made that field goal, just laughing, picturing, you know, Vinny and Queens, you know, slamming down his Miller Lite.
Well, you know, remember the field goal attempt, the long field goal attempt from Folk when the Jets had 12 men on the field. You're just like, what are you? The game was a 4th and 5, and they had 12 men on the field and gave the Patriots a first down. And I was certain the Patriots were going to go in and get a touchdown there, because you're just looking at the Jets like, what are you doing? Like, of course you did this. Let the Jets be the Jets. And the week before, they let Buffalo be Buffalo, and they were right there. Cam Newton fumbled the ball away, and Governed by Fear, the Twitter account, made a great gift. Have you seen his gift that he made?
No.
So I mentioned that we were very close to recording a podcast that day, and my theory is that because Cam Newton fumbled, we were not able to record. Like, that is That's my theory, because we had talked about it, and then it kind of, our plans fell apart. And so I said to Govern by Fear, I said, can you give me a GIF where Cam Newton fumbles away in Titletown? And he did it. And it's great.
That's right. That's
and so
right.
The show account, we have to tweet it from the show account. But
I turned into Ron Burgundy in the bar towards the end of Anchorman after that Buffalo game. Yeah. I make fart noises with my mouth.
I was like, there's no way. Like, I remember seeing that and just being like, there's no way Ironhead's going to want to record a podcast today. There's just no way. And then our collective schedules, once again, are always getting in the way. But
I go to one particular place for the last, I've been in the Northwest for the better part of 8 years now. And I go to the same place, and I got used to over the, they've been obscenely successful, and I walk out of there like a peacock 80% of the time coming into the season. Now I'm walking out of there looking like, you know, God damn it. Like I'm a Jets fan. I walked out of there. I left a vapor trail. I left there so fast. God, it's just, like I said, it's just, I referenced the 93 season earlier. The 93 season was a lot of fun for a lot of different reasons. The season ended on such a high note. It was the promise coming. Bledsoe hit Michael Timpson against Miami in the right corner in overtime to knock the Dolphins out of the playoffs. And, you know, the team wound up staying. They didn't move to St. Louis. It was just, it was a great year just watching them build something. And I'm not sure they're actually, this is more of kind of a team in transition, but I do see steps. I don't like Newton. He's been better. They're understanding who they are. They're learning how to win. They're playing better football. If they don't turn the football over, they have a chance, and even against Baltimore this coming week.
Well, that's going to be a tall order. I don't know how, with the personnel they had in the field this week, I have no idea how they're going to.
And Baltimore is the run heavy team in the NFL.
And yeah, and I'm not saying they can't win. I'm saying, again, this stacks up as a major challenge. And good on them. They put in all the work last week to overcome the challenge they had in front of them. Let's see what they cook up this week. And, you know, this is a tough one. But you look at it and you go, hey, you got 5 losses. If this is the last game you lose, you'll be at 10-6. You'll have a good chance to make the playoffs. That's not the end of the world. But they have a lot of work to do. They have to get people healthy. They have to stop making mistakes. They have to get that offense together. By the way, Jacoby Myers, unreal.
Myers and Bird are good players. They're loaded in the offensive backfield. Burkhead is the ultimate Swiss Army knife. They've got something in Harris, and my love of Sony Michel is long been noted on this. They can build on this.
Sony, I'm looking at it like I'm watching what Harris does, and I'm remembering that last game that Sony had before he got hurt, when he was just owning. Like, he has the 2 longest runs of his career, and I'm like, oh man, like they're opening the holes. The offensive line is playing pretty well, and I'm thinking, oh man, this would be the time. This, like, Sony, I wish he was showing it off right now. And but somebody made a point yesterday during the game about how, you know, he couldn't get on the field last year because of pass protection. How many times did we talk about that, where Sony as a rookie was just ready to protect Tom Brady, and that's what made him their top pick, or at least the running back that they went with in 2018 in that draft?
And I get the reason why they drafted skill positions with Michelle and Harry over the last couple of years.
Yes.
Right. I mean,
those are finishing pieces.
They are finishing pieces. The thing with you get them on a rookie contract for 5 years at a skill position where the numbers are huge for veteran. They've got something in Onwenu. Tooney is an asset that they can tag. There are pieces there, and they're not going to be picking in the 30s this coming year. I'm pretty confident of that.
So our good friend Ben Volen raised the point that they're paying $15 million for a guard in Joe Tooney. And I they've gotten some criticism for this. I just want to say, I don't think the plan, when they put the tag on Joe Tooney, when do you do the tag? It's like January, February. Or is it March? Anyway, or is it like right before free agency? Whatever it was.
There's quite a window.
Yeah, and like when they put the tag on him, I'm sure the plan was either let's work out a long-term deal or let's trade him. And then this pandemic happened, which we saw severely crushed Cam Newton's earning power because no one could bring him in to work him out to see if he was healthy. It also made it difficult for teams to commit to long-term contracts because nobody knows what the cap is going to be next year. And everybody during the summer knew that there was going to be some kind of crush on revenue this year. Like with no live audiences or reduced live audiences, your revenue is just taking a big hit, and then the cap's going to take a big hit. So the Patriots wound up in a position where, how are we going to trade a guy to a team when that team isn't really going to be able to sign him to a long-term deal? And how are we going to be able to sign him to a long-term deal when we don't know what the cap's going to be? So I don't think that the plan was, hey, let's pay Joe Tooney $15 million this year. I think the plan was, let's keep Joe Tooney out of free agency and then either trade him or get him for a deal that we consider to be good value. Like they got a good deal with Shaq Mason.
Right.
But now with Onwenu, it's like that opens up so many options. Maybe they keep Joe Tooney. Maybe they don't.
And he's played multiple positions. He's a good player.
Is he every bit as good as Mankins? He's in the conversation, right?
I'm not going to lie to you and tell you I'm an offensive line aficionado, but they played the tag game with Mankins as well, and if they're playing the tag game, that they value you clearly,
right? And I mean, it's just become a very strange year, and nobody wants to, there's this no excuses thing. First of all, what happens if you make excuses for the Patriots? I would love to know what the penalty is for that. I would love to know, like, if fans excuse the Patriots' performance, what's the fallout? Where does that go? I don't understand. Because we're all discouraged from doing that about our respective teams. It doesn't matter. If you hate your team for losing, if you blame them for losing, it doesn't matter where we assign blame to.
I like my footy pajamas collar.
Yeah, right. Like, whatever. It doesn't matter. But I think it's important to explain how we got to where we are, because that's how you unwind it and start solving problems. And the task in front of the page, which you have to understand, is that these are so much closer to where you work than the decisions that go on are so much closer to companies that you work for and your actual normal workplace. Nobody wants to think about it that way because it's boring. But this is about resource allocation, capital to be able to hire people, capital to be able to draft personnel. And the Patriots are going to be in good positions with those things, whatever happens. They're not going to, unless they have some kind of miracle where they win almost all the rest of their games and then go play, because they're already not getting a bye in the playoffs. There's only one of those. They're not getting it with five losses. But if they can put all that together and be like, you know, the 2001 Patriots and surprise everybody, great. You'll get the 32nd draft pick and you'll have some money coming off the books from some of the other guys whose contracts run out this year. Tom Brady's dead money goes away, and you've got some room to work. You've now developed a guy like Jacoby Myers. And what I was saying earlier was weapons. Everybody obsesses on weapons. The problem with the Patriots last year was you had a guy like Jacoby Myers who had no experience, none in this offense, none in the NFL. Now he's put in the time. Now he's developed. Bird is a veteran. He's been in the league for a few years. You can go to those guys. If Julian Edelman gets healthy, you're in a better position. If N'Keal Harry gets healthy, he's going to get better. If N'Keal Harry is a bust, I mean, the guy's in a rough situation with concussions, but if N'Keal Harry's a bust, he's a bust. These things happen. But if he's not, I mean, you remember in the red zone yesterday when they were trying to run those screens? I think they tried to run one to Gunner.
Yes.
That was in N'Keal Harry play.
I mean, Harry's 6'4", 225. He's a big boy.
Right, but he makes people miss. And that's right. Why – remember they threw a screen to Gunner in the red zone that kind of didn't go anywhere?
It was lost 5 yards, yeah.
Yeah, it was – that's the play. Right. That's the play where when Harry gets that ball, you're like, this is why he's here. It would be nice to see them be able to get to that. I think if Sony comes back, I think we've talked about it. Harris has run well. Burkhead was great yesterday. But getting Sony back would help them with this ball control phase. And now that they've gone out and they've shown on film, Cam Newton kind of getting that ball out quick, hitting Myers, hitting Bird. There's a little more things that they can do on offense now.
That was the thing that Belichick and McDaniels both pointed out. After the game, the ball got out quick.
Yes. And so now that we know where we are, we can see where the potential solutions are for those problems. And somebody today on Twitter, I don't know, some rando, was telling me that my rose-colored glasses are no longer on. And I'm interpreting that to mean that I was optimistic about this team to a really high degree in the past. While I was optimistic about this team to a really high degree from 2016 through 2019.
It's almost like there was a track record caller.
Well, they won the division 4 times. They won the conference championship 3 times, and they won 2 Super Bowls. So I feel like
I feel like that's good.
Yeah, and I don't think that's rose-colored glasses. I think that's assessing a team for what it is. And I'm assessing this team as a flawed remodeling project that is going to have to solve a lot of problems if they're going to make the playoffs and if they're going to win the playoffs. But that doesn't mean that those problems are unsolvable. It just means that that they have a tall order, you know? And by the way, you had like 20 winning seasons, right? Every once in a while, you're supposed to have a dud, just a total dud. You haven't had a dud since 2002. This is what the rest of the fans deal with. We go through this. The Giants have had 3 head coaches. The Giants have had more head coaches since 2015 than the Patriots have had since what, 1992?
Weep.
That's what we do. The rest of the league, all the fans weep.
There's a reason why it's called Entitled Town.
Yes. Yes. And
so I've been wanting to ask you, Dave.
Do it.
We were actually recording when the news the Patriots signed Newton.
Yeah.
Happened.
Right.
So we've got 8 weeks. He's played 7 games. They're 3-4 in his starts. As an outsider, obviously you sign him to that contract. Absolutely. You sign him every day. You take a flyer on it. You roll the dice with it. Does it say anything to you about Stidham? That they're playing him?
Man. Well, first of all, so 2 things on Stidham. First, I'm going to make an excuse. And I just made air quotes that only Ironhead could see.
You know, almost the coach, Greg Bedard, says that they think he's a wimp inside the building.
Well,
like okay. He would know, but.
Didn't Tom Curran have a similar story?
Yeah, Curran trampolined off of Bedard, which was tough scene.
But was it? I'm assuming that was sourced. Okay, so let me give you the excuse first. The excuse is the guy's in his second year. He had 3 weeks of practice between his rookie year and his second year. That's not good. That's not ideal. Not ideal, caller. That's not how you want to work somebody into taking over the starting quarterback of the New England Patriots after Tom Brady. 3 weeks of practice. No.
When he's played, he's been put in really thankless positions where he has to push the ball down the field in a little bit of time, hence the turnovers.
Yeah, look, he hasn't been good. And then the current story was that Stidham, they're a little disappointed at the way he didn't compete in the offseason. And, you know, my like caveat with Tom, it's not like Wickersham where you're just looking at this and going like, how did you put these pieces together and come up with this? Like
a heaping pile of vaguely sourced shit.
Right. When Tom sources a story, I generally feel like somebody told him that, but that Tom kind of like bites on what they want him to. And let me just make something very clear to everyone. The New England Patriots don't care about the media. They don't. They only see it as a tool. Okay?
They do. And when they use that tool, they use Schefter primarily. They go national, not local.
But when they're talking to you, okay, they're doing it because they have an agenda. And I don't know Correct. What their agenda would be in sharing that story about Stidham. I don't know who gave that to Tom Curran. I just always sort of I'm like what's that guy? Nate Silver, right? Like I just when I hear a story and I know who wrote it and how their stories usually go, I assign a range of probabilities. And within that range of probabilities is it's 100% true to maybe they're trying to tweak this guy to get him a little motivated. So somewhere in there is probably the truth. Now, maybe Stidham isn't the guy. They're certainly not tanking for Trevor. Maybe they re-sign Newton. That to me, by the way, that to me, now listen, if they re-sign Newton, it will either be because they get a tremendous deal like they did this year, or it will be because he has earned it between now and week 17.
That's fair. That's completely fair. I don't like the player caller. I don't enjoy that.
What I'm trying to say.
As you pointed out, my head almost exploded scanner style when he reached that football out.
Well, what I'm trying to say is if they re-sign him, and he makes somewhere in the neighborhood of the kind of money Cam Newton should be making, he will probably have earned your approval by then. Does that make sense?
It does.
I know you can't see that happening, but
he's been better the last two games. There's no doubt about it. He was the fumble in Buffalo was kind of emblematic of I never feel like he's the guy to get the pardon the pun, to get the ball over the goal line, if you will. He's just good enough to disappoint you. He's also, at this point in his career, he's got enough. He's been hit enough. He's old enough where he's still, listen, he's a fabulous athlete. He reminds me, like Josh Allen's ceiling reminds me a lot of Cam Newton. Josh Allen is Cam Newton. When did Newton win the MVP? 2015?
He's not that good.
Josh Allen. No. Josh Allen is Cam Newton in 2013 right now.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense.
He's a little bit away from that.
I don't think he's that good either, but.
You know, the fact that the Patriots were able to should have won that game in Buffalo with that defense against that quarterback, you know, he's dynamic. There's no doubt about it. But Newton can be both dynamic and very limited. The offense is very limited. It's just a fact.
But Ironhead, you're not accounting for the womb.
Oh, dear.
Belichick God. Womb. Because Belichick is like a magician. So there's so many ways of looking at this. There is like Belichick relied exclusively on Brady, like your friend Ron Borges told us. And
wrong vouch Borges.
People. Never vouch. Never Ironhead vouched for Borges, I think. I think I heard that on the internet.
I'm sorry, President Trump. What did you say?
Borges won Pennsylvania. Everyone knows this. But wouldn't it be great if all of the electors voted for Ron Borges?
No, it wouldn't be.
No, it would not. It would be terrible. Yeah. It would probably be bad. It would probably be worse than anybody who actually ran for president.
Plagiarist 2020.
I'll take Kanye West for 1,000. But Biden's got some plagiarism too.
Well, that's a good point by you.
But who are we trying to talk about here? We're trying to talk about I want to call them like hammer narratives, right? Like we're just going to take a hammer and just bash all of this complicated. It takes so many people working together, getting stuff done and putting aside, coming together, putting aside ego to accomplish something as difficult as winning a Super Bowl. It takes so much work. It is such a complex thing. To suggest that any one person, that Tom Brady or Bill Belichick or anybody else in the organization is at such a level of importance that they alone are the one who determined it is ridiculous. It's taking a hammer and just bashing all the complexity. And this argument of like, it was only Tom Brady. Well, you know what? We saw Tom Brady not play pretty well the other night. Like, Tom has played well this season, but nobody's perfect. Bill has had bad games as a coach. He has had absolute strokes of genius. The 2001 Patriots won the Super Bowl with an above average, but not great starting quarterback who happened to also be Tom Brady. So when we go look at Tom, who, by the way, was drafted by a man named Bill Belichick. When we go back and look at Tom Brady's or Belichick's pre-Brady career, and what was the number you were talking to me before?
Borges. Tweeted out that if you pull away Brady statistics, only 20 years worth of statistics, or 19 years worth of statistics with the Patriots, that Bill Belichick has a winning percentage of 460.
Right, right, right. Do you think that Borges will bring that up at when he's giving
when he's Bill's presenting Hall Belichick for the Hall of Fame? Yeah,
Hall of Fame testimonial. Like,
thank God. There's, I mean, it's a no doubter, right? It's an absolute no doubter that Belichick is in the Hall of Fame.
I hope so. I really hope, like, the best thing about Borges being in the media is that he now has to sit in front of the Hall of Fame committee and wax, like, poetic about all of these guys that he completely trashed 20 years ago.
How ridiculous is it? How ridiculous is it that Ron Borges, who is a plagiarist, and he's got caught in using fake sources, is still on the Hall of Fame selection committee? That is a disgraceful.
I mean,
fake Don Yee.
But it's the only thing. It's like the one thing that, like, and he probably doesn't suffer. I would suffer from that. If I had to, oh my God, if I had to sit there 20 years later and someone was like I dumped on Richey Caldwell probably in 2006. If in 2026 I had to sit there and like give a speech about why Richey Caldwell belonged in the Hall of Fame, it would just eat at me. Oh, I'd hate that. And like, but these
catch
guys have
the
no
ball,
shame.
Richey. They have, catch the they ball. Have,
they just have no shame at all. And, like, I'm sure Ron Borges doesn't sit there at the Hall of Fame committee. I'm sure he's just proud of himself that he gets to speak in front of the Hall of Fame committee, which is the shame of it. But, man, it is just these people. Like, Chris Gasper, it's like he's sitting there in the middle. What was the game when Romo called it a few weeks ago? I don't know if it was the Bills or it was the 49ers game probably. And he's just, like, all over Romo for not criticizing them. They all need to live in this universe where it's find the justification to be negative and terrible. Just find that justification because what this is all about is it's not about reporting to you about what's happening and helping you understand why a team is struggling or why a team is playing well. To help you get a sense of what a team needs to do to win a Super Bowl, that's not what this industry is about. What this industry is about is about making you feel better that you're not an NFL coach or player. It's about making you feel like you're smarter than the coaches and that, yeah, all these guys, they got lucky. They hit the genetic lottery. They are fast and they can jump high and they're strong, but they're weak-willed. They're not good in the clutch. Not like you. You would really dig down and you wouldn't make excuses. And you'd show up on game day and all that nonsense, right? These exceptionally gifted athletes also put in a measure of work that is above and beyond what most people have to deal with on a weekly basis to get ready for one of these football games. The number of things that can change at the snap is, you know, exponential. There's just all these possibilities if you read your key. And now that the guy can go three different ways, right? And if he goes left, then that means somebody else is going to do something else. And everybody has to understand what all of these possibilities are, process them, and as an 11-man unit, make the proper adjustments and deal with those things as they happen. You have to be so prepared to get it right and to win a Super Bowl. This industry is about unwinding all of that, taking out the hammer and crushing all the complexity and making it about the coach is stupid, the GM is stupid, and the players are just, they're just not up to the task.
The mental and physical toughness it takes to compete in an NFL game. Listen, neither you nor I played in the NFL. No. You know, take your Harry, you know, you and I are Harry high school bullshit. I didn't throw a hammer like some of my colleagues do, caller, but
well, you're a good basketball.
Think about what happened in high school and multiply it by six figures to be at that level.
Yes.
And put your body through that. And to put in the study time that goes into that.
I was watching one of the running backs last night. I think it may have been P. Ryan. And I was watching a play and I was like, oh man, he got tackled after 7 yards. I'm sure he's sitting there thinking, and well, he probably wasn't thinking this, but I'm thinking, man, he must have been, that was probably like a touchdown every time in high school. And it's got to be like at some point, everything is so easy in high school for these guys who make the pros. And it's just, there's got to be some point where you're like, oh man, that like open field, just run all day doesn't exist anymore. And I'm going to get 4 yards.
Man, do you remember?
And fight for those 4 yards against a guy who weighs 300 pounds and runs the 40 in under 5 seconds. Like, ugh, it's mad.
Do you remember Todd Collins, the quarterback for the Bills? He played for the Bills, the Bears, a couple other teams. He went to Walpole High School. Okay. He played in the Division I Super Bowl, the old Foxborough Stadium. Yeah. Against Brockton High School. I didn't see him throw the ball the first time. I heard it.
Yeah.
Hear the ball from the other side of the field. And that guy was middling at best. The skill it takes, Rich Keefe probably rolls into the WEI studios at 9:35 in the morning and leaves at 2:01. The level of devotion that these guys go through, never mind the hours the coaches put in. It is for these yakkers, and listen, Gasper triggers me, but it's the lazy, uninformed. I mean, really, I hate to use the phrase fake news, but the disingenuous propaganda they're spreading and the glee they're taking in the Patriots having the audacity to temporarily look bad is nauseating.
Well, I think, you know, I think a fake news is sort of like just straight misinformation, right? Like if you said the Patriots lost the game, that's fake news. And then there's like this area of opinion where you're just being so disingenuous. And that to me is Chris Gasper. He is now, he's sort of, he has like
Chris Gasper should just tell me when the Red Sox tickets go on sale. Because that's basically what he is. That's the Red Sox Reuters Gazette that used to be on Morrissey Boulevard.
Well, it's like he sort of has the, because he uses a lot of big words, he's sort of like the smart one. Is sort of how he's portrayed. And it's like, oh, it's the same thing. It's just presented in a different package. But yeah.
There was a line about Kurt Schilling that I read. I can't remember who I read it about, who authored it. It was said about Schilling and it applies to Gasper. Just because you seem eloquent doesn't mean you're intelligent. I'm paraphrasing it, but that's exactly what it is.
Well, it's like, I was just reading this book about how to tell if people are trustworthy. And one of the ways is people one of the ways you can tell a person is untrustworthy is when they use a lot of words, they use a lot of big words, and they say a lot without really saying anything. And there's a good handful of those guys out in the media. You know who they are.
I have words. I have the best words.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, where we are right now is that this is a fascinating Patriots season. Completely fascinating. And we're going to see, they're going to grow and develop and we'll see where it goes, I think.
Yeah, it really is. It's the end of Terminator 2 when Linda Hamilton's character is on, like Sarah Connor, after Schwarzenegger lowers himself into the vat and disintegrates the Terminator. The movie ends with her on the road at night with the headlights showing on the road. And she goes, for the first time, I don't know what the future brings me.
Right.
And I'm looking forward to it. And that's a...
That's a what? Hold on, you're breaking up. Can you hear me?
Brady lowered himself into a vat of lava down at Tampa with Coach Kangol Bruce Arians.
So you just cut out and came back with Tom Brady being lowered into lava.
That's
but
what
I think
she
I
said.
Understood. I think we understand what you're saying is that it's like that scene at the end of Terminator when she's saying we don't know what the future holds. And I personally you know, it's unfortunate the way things unfolded with the pandemic. And, you know, I just had this major work project fall in my lap. And I mean, it's the kind of thing you can't, it is, I mean, people are losing their jobs. This economy is nuts. When something comes along, it's like, I have to put the Patriots on hold. This is, you can't screw around in these times. And one of the things that's disappointing to me is that I knew this season was going to be completely unpredictable. And we had a situation where the starting quarterback missed like weeks of practice because he was sick. And it's like, what's going to happen? And we just don't know. So anyway, like their bye week, like flip-flopped. They were supposed to play Denver 1 week. And then they were just like, oh, you just had your bye week. You'll play him next week. It's wild. Anyway, I feel like we've come and we've done mostly a podcast. So
far. Almost a podcast, caller.
Almost a podcast. You know, I think maybe in the future we should try to maybe open up our format a little bit. Maybe we should consider a situation where we don't necessarily do only one podcast a week. Maybe we do two, where Patrick Scartelli comes and sits in. And either with both of us or just the two of you or just me and Scartelli, if he'll even talk to me. And then
why would you want to do that?
What I'm saying, maybe we could mix up a little bit. Maybe we could, because I think why would he want to do that? I don't know. But I think for this, but the idea of let's, you know what I think, you know why I think Scartelli would want to talk to me? When we do the Wickersham episode, the long promised Wickersham episode. He's really been a proponent of us doing that. I think he'd have some interesting things to say.
I've gotten a lot of feedback from a lot of different people. There's more interest in that than I would have dreamed.
Yeah.
And you sent me that article via email a couple of months ago, and going through that again, I wore my teeth down to a nub, gnashing them together.
Yeah.
Greg Bedard was cited in that piece. Well, you know how I feel about
one. That's the second one. That's the Wickersham only. We still have to go back and do the first one first.
The Van Natta one. The Van Natta and Wickersham
one. This is good off-season stuff. And I don't know, maybe let's talk about it. Maybe let's find a way to do – we'd have to get, like, Al to get off script a little bit. But – because he really sticks to the script. He's, even every time Scartelli was here, he introduced
the consistency. The consistency is only Bill Belichick could appreciate. Right. Al septum deep in a pile of white right now. So don't worry about it.
Well – poll workers of the world unite. That's all I can say. So anyway, all right. Well, I think we've done a podcast. I think this is good. I think this is a good comeback episode. I think I'm coming back stronger than Alex Smith. Okay. That's just my ego talking.
Ooh.
But why? Ooh. He was great. He
328 yards passing, but the turnovers.
The three interceptions. But you know what?
You know what's funny? Every time I watch these games where I watch college games, I'm watching quarterbacks going, please be better than Newton. Please be available. Be better than Newton. Please, God, be better than Cam.
You know
Newton.
What? Listen, I'll say it out loud. In this recording right now, if the Patriots got Alex Smith, that would not be a bad thing. If he was our starting quarterback next year, I'd sign up for that right now.
He's also 37 years old.
If you can get Alex Smith or better, that's my new minimum bar. If you have to be at least as good as Alex Smith to quarterback this team, how about that?
Yeah, if the Patriots had Teddy Bridgewater this year or a player like that, I'm not saying Teddy Bridgewater. He's reasonable dollars, by the way. If they had Bridgewater, who is I should punch myself in the head for using this phrase, a game manager who doesn't turn the ball over and takes what's given to him, they're probably at worst 5-3.
Maybe. But Newton has made some plays for them that kept him in those games when he would then later not make the plays. So
two touchdowns, seven interceptions. He's turned the ball over 10 times in 8 games. That's not winning football.
I know. But he's also made some big plays for that offense where you look and you go, okay, but he kept both teams in the game, Joe Flacco style, the Eli Manning special.
Yeah, Gene Hackman in Hoosiers is applauding Cam's bounce pass. It's very fundamentally sound. Mm-hmm. All right, I'm going to bite my tongue. I'm going to bite my tongue from the Cam bashing for the rest of the for the minute or two we got left.
Well, in typical Entitled Town style, we have gone a good half hour over what we plan to do.
Brevity is not our strong suit.
Back in the saddle, let's not try to figure out what our strong suit is, because then we're really going to find out we don't have
one. We have no strengths, Colin.
That's terrifying. So, okay. So, I'm not even going to get into the reviews. We don't even need to go through all that stuff.
Right? That's right. EntitledTown@gmail.com. EntitledTown@gmail.com. The Twitter account is @EntitledTown. Dave, what are we on to?
We are on to the defending mid-season 2019 Super Bowl champion, Baltimore Ravens.
And don't forget, turn off your radio.
All right, guys. Bye for now.